You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
And so there's this other part of your brain, the medial lateral prefrontal cortex. It's a little bit further forward, and that's your creative flow. That's like your state of joy and flow. And for a lot of people, it like happens when they engage in that thing that they just love so much. You know, it's like, oh, I get a runner's high. So that's the part of your brain that we're trying to get to with freestyle.
I want to be a producer with a hit show on Broadway.
You're listening to the Producer's Perspective Podcast with your host, Tony Award winner, Ken Davenport.
Lights up on Washington Heights, up at the break of day, I wake up and I got this little...
That is the Lin-Manuel Miranda musical In the Heights, in that fantastic opening number. You know, with all the talk about Hamilton these days, it's easy to forget how good In the Heights actually is. Well, today we're going to talk to one of the guys who was around at the beginning of In the Heights and the whole Lin-Manuel Miranda phenomenon, and he's the guy responsible for ushering in this new genre of art on Broadway in freestyle rap. He's the creator of Freestyle Love Supreme, which is a fantastic show on Broadway right now. Go see it if you haven't. So tune into this episode. Very inspirational. A true entrepreneur. You are going to love it. And spoiler alert, I do a little rap, hip-hop, at the end. Maybe a little beatbox. You will hear it. This week's episode has been sponsored by AJV Media, who also has been the official Super Conference videographer since the very first Super Conference. We're super thankful for that. They're great partners of ours, and they are great videographers available for all of your video needs. They'll be back next month, so you'll be able to say hello to them in person at our 2019 Super Conference. For more information, visit them at ajvmedia.com, ajvmedia.com. And now, let's hear a little more In the Heights before we get to Anthony.
Even follow the norms in Northern Manhattan and maintain. Get off at 181st and take the escalator. I hope you're writing this down. I'm going to test you later. I'm getting tested. Times are tough on this bodega. 2 months ago, somebody bought Ortega's. Our neighbors started packing up and picking up. And ever since the rents went up, it's gotten mad expensive. But we live with just enough.
In the Heights.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSMusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Hello, podcast fans. Welcome back to the Producer's Perspective Podcast. My name is Ken Davenport. I've been looking forward to this episode for the past couple weeks. So 2 weeks ago, I saw one of the freshest and most unique and authentic shows I've seen on Broadway in a very long time. And the cool thing, it was a type of show that I never thought I'd ever see on Broadway for so many reasons, which I will get into. That show was, of course, do you know it? Freestyle Love Supreme.
Bring, 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 bring.
Today, we have the conceiver and one of the stars of that show here today. Please welcome to the podcast, Mr. Anthony Two Touch Beniziali.
Va bene.
Nice. Welcome.
Thank you.
So I'm thrilled to have you here. For those of you who don't know Anthony, he's a performer, producer, instructor, speaker on the TED stage. He helped relaunch the Electric Company on children's television. Is that true?
Yep.
Like, thank you for bringing that back.
Sure.
And he helped create this very unique art form and blend of rap and theater, which with his buds Tommy Kail and Lin-Manuel Miranda, who you've probably never heard of.
Never heard.
Helped became the basis of In the Heights and, of course, Hamilton. He's a true entrepreneur. I am thrilled that he's here. So let's start back in the early days of Two Touch. So you're a little kid.
Did you, like, when people said, what do you want to do when you grow up? You're like, oh, I'm going to be a freestyle rapper.
Professional soccer player.
Really? That's what it was?
Oh, yeah.
Where did you grow up?
Outside of Philly.
Outside of Philly.
Born in Philly and then moved outside of it, and all my brothers are amazing soccer players. My brother Joe was a professional soccer player. Played for the team here in New Jersey, New York, before they became the Red Bulls. They were the Metro Stars. Played in college, was top college athlete, and then that's something I very much wanted to do.
So which came first, music or theater for you?
Music.
So
yeah.
What was the first introduction to music then as a kid?
My dad played in a band for a super long time. He had a wedding band, so he'd gig out. That was one of his three jobs. He also worked for Ford Philco. And he was a coach. So he was like this, you know, mad scientist of a human being. And he had band practices at our house. So the Drakes, they were called. They'd all come over. One gentleman was blind in the group who played the sax. Super cool. And I used to just like sit. And sometimes there was no front to my dad's bass drum. So sometimes I would actually sit inside of the drum. And I just loved that. I loved the bass. I loved the beat of the songs.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
So what, did you play an instrument first?
Yeah, and then I started playing the trombone in fifth grade because it was the hardest instrument to carry. So I was really excited about being bigger than I was. I mean, I had four older brothers and I'm the youngest. So being big was a big deal, and the trombone was like the same size as I was when I first started playing it. And then I just got really into it, and I also just got really into hip-hop at a very early age.
So tell me how that happens.
Yeah.
To an Italian kid from Philadelphia.
Right. So I had a best friend named Abe Forman Greenwald. He's still named Abe Forman Greenwald. And he and I used to just push each other in terms of like musical tastes. And he heard this album by Young MC called Stone Cold Rhymin'. And I heard it at his house, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. What is this? He was like, it's rap, you know. And I'd heard LL Cool J before that. I was kind of obsessed with Around the Way Girl when it first came out. And I kind of heard it on the radio, and I was like, this doesn't sound like anything else I've heard. And I became kind of obsessed with that song. And then Abe got that album, and I was like, I have to have this album. And so this is probably like fourth or fifth grade.
What year was that about?
1989. And then I believe. And then I listened to it nonstop. I wanted to know every single word on every single song. And I still remember probably 90% of that album to this day. And then that was it. The sort of neural network got created in my mind for the algorithm of rap and like the mathematical beauty of how it adds up. And that's how I used to go to sleep. I would like listen to rap album after rap album and memorize every song on every album I could get my hands on. Tribe Called Quest probably being the first, like, I wanted everything they had. And then De La Soul. Yeah, so it was just that there was just something I think that started getting built inside of my brain upon absorbing all that music.
Some people listen to Simon Garfunkel going to sleep. You listen to hip hop to try to get to sleep.
Going to Scott. Yeah.
So this is a bigger question, but what, for you, but also for people in general, what do you think it is about rap that gets people? Listen, in my lifetime, and it's very rare, I think a new musical style is born. And we're close to the same age, I think. So I grew up on, you know, DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince a little bit. That was the first one.
Ooh, summertime. Oh my gosh, yeah, that first album's amazing. And Beastie Boys.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know this, but I was a breakdancer when I was a kid too. So Beat Street, and Breakin' and all that stuff.
Oh, Breakin' 2, Electric Boogaloo.
Of course.
Oh yeah.
I wanted to do a musical version of that at
Oh, please.
We'll talk about that after.
Yeah.
But so this new musical style is really created, or this musical genre. What is it that you think appeals to so many different people? Again, Italian from Philly, this white kid in a prep school in Massachusetts.
Yeah.
How does it cross?
Well, I think hip-hop is the music of the disenfranchised, right? So most great things that have been created in the United States are created by black people. And in the Bronx is where this rap started. Probably early 70s, DJ Kool Herc having these parties, and Coke LaRocque, you know, being sort of the first MC in some ways. But it very much sort of starting in the epicenter of where I think most of New York City was terrified of the Bronx, right? This is Robert Moses. This is after redlining happening. The Cross Bronx Expressway comes through, cuts the neighborhood in half. People are literally living in these bombed out looking buildings. And the message then comes out, which is Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five. This is like 1982. And that song really captures this, like, it's called The Message, right? So it really captures this essence of, hey, let me tell you about my world and why you should care. And I think all of us feel that in some way. All of us at some point in our lives are misunderstood or feel left out. And so, especially the youth. And I think that's why probably hip hop, and it keeps, you know, reinventing itself every number of years, because it's mostly in some ways about disenfranchisement. So when you become super successful as a hip hop artist, how does that alter your approach or what it is this art form is actually kind of like pushing? So yeah, that's my take on it.
And why do you think it also, flashing forward now to see its success in theater, why do you think it's transitioned and been such a great new musical style for the Broadway stage?
I think Broadway is starting to really broaden its horizons as well, right? The Great White Way is getting a little more colorful. And so that was the impetus behind In the Heights. So, you know, when Lynn was first starting to work on that, I was running the theater at the Drama Bookshop. And Tommy and I had started this small production company because we didn't know any better. Why wouldn't you tell us how hard it was, Kim?
So you know, it's funny. I will just say this. Those words that you just spoke right now, we didn't know any better, I didn't know what I was doing, are the most commonly uttered words on this podcast by people successful like yourself.
Yeah.
It seems like the key to success at the beginning is not knowing what the fuck you're doing.
Absolutely. You know, when you see the ceiling, you bump up against it. When you don't, you just keep building. You just keep going higher and higher. I think in essence, those mistakes that you make that you didn't know you were making are such a blessing. They're so huge, right? And then when you know afterward, you're like, oh, wow, maybe I would have made a couple of different choices for sure. It might have gone a little bit faster. I mean, you know, it took 7-8 years to get In the Heights to where it was. But you learn so much, right? Like, there's no other way than to just do it. And this is something I often will say to friends and people who come and ask for advice. I'm like, yeah, just say you're going to put it up and put it up. Right? So, yeah. So I think hip hop coming to Broadway and how it's being used in storytelling now, not just as a, hey, this is an art form, let's stage the art form, but it's implicit in the way it's being voiced. Rather, the characters are really, they have something about them that is disenfranchised. I mean, and that's why Lynn reacted, I think, to Hamilton, to that story that Ron Chernow wrote, because he was like, this is Tupac. Like, Alexander Hamilton is Tupac. And the striking similarities, like, they are ubiquitous. I mean, they are like, riddled. And he was like, I got to write this from that perspective. And so that's what Lynn knows as well. You know, I mean, that's his language. You know, a lot of us have grown up with the language of hip-hop, and I think more and more people feel the same way.
So let's go back to you and your journey. So you fall in love with rap, you go to sleep with rap at night. When do you say, this is what I'm going to do?
Never.
What was the reaction? Like, that's when I was like, Mom, Dad,
yeah,
I'm going to be a rapper.
Well, I think the big turning point for me was I was kicked off the soccer team my sophomore year at Wesleyan. And I got cut from the team. I got into a fight with the assistant coach, and I was devastated because, like I said, soccer was a big part of my life, and I wanted to interact with the world through the lens of soccer. And I got kicked off, and I called my dad later that day, and I was like crying my eyes. I was like, I got kicked off the soccer team. It's been a part of my life since I was 3, right? So I was like, this is devastating. And he was like, hey, pick yourself up. It's going to be okay. You can play in lots of different ways. And if you wanted to transfer, we can look into it. But I went to Wesleyan. I mean, I loved my school. And the next day, there were auditions for an improv troupe on campus called Gag Reflex. And I'd seen them all throughout my frosh year. And I was like, these are the funniest humans I have ever seen. And so I auditioned just on a whim because I was like, that's great. I don't know if I have the skill set, but I'd like to find out.
You acted before?
I mean, I dabbled in acting before. I definitely was in like high school plays. My brother Michael is an amazing actor. And I had so many older brothers. I was always in shadows in some way, you know, and I was trying to find my own light. And I think doing improv felt different enough from like regular theater and film and television acting. And I was like, let me try this. And I auditioned and I got in. And
what was your audition? Do you remember?
Well, I mean, in improv, it's just these like games that you would play. There was one that was music based because they do this thing, and this is the thing that I think started that freestyle engine up for me, which is there was a song or a game called the Song Game, and that's where you're just in a scene with another person. You and I are in a scene, you're on Broadway and in an office talking about theater, and at some point there's a moderator and they say freeze, and then they get a genre of music from the audience, and sometimes there's a keyboard player or a guitarist or not, just a cappella that you have to kind of support the other person. And they get a genre and it's like, great, country and western. And now you have to continue the scene. Well, I'm here on Broadway, just singing a song. My car broke down and I can't get along. You know, and you just have to hit your tropes of whatever that genre is and continue the scene. And I loved that. There was something about the way I think the neural networking in my brain had been built to that point that was particularly suited to it. And that was one of the games I did. I also just did a scene, World's Worst, it's called, where you like are the epitome of the worst version of that. And I was a used car salesman, so I was the world's worst used car salesman. And I was doing a scene with my dear friend Ashley Kinesi in the audition. And I remember specifically that sort of just being like, oh, I know how to play in this way. Right? It's this whole yes and mentality of like, cool, we just jumped over this big river and like, it's just a carpet, but yes, there's a river there, right? And I just took to it. I loved it so much. I also loved that everyone in the group had a voice. It wasn't like, oh, the seniors rule and like, you just have to follow what they say. And because I'd been in a big Italian household, right? Seniority is the it. Like, that's it. The oldest brother and then everything trickles down and I'm the fifth, right? So I barely ate at night. And so being in that group to see that everyone's voice mattered and that everyone had input as to how this thing kind of got built, that's still in my DNA. That's still in Freestyle Love Supreme to this day.
Yeah, that's what struck me so much about the show, which I loved, is I'm a huge improv fan. I've followed it for a long time. And I was like, oh, this is structured in the same way as an improv show. It's just a different language. And obviously what you're doing is even so much more challenging because you are making up raps and rhymes and all that on the spot. So when did that start? When did the freestyle thing start for you?
So once I started doing Song Game, this is like the mid and late 90s. And at Wesleyan, like raps, like everyone's listening to the rap. Like the Fugees, The Score came out, and Lauryn Hill's Miseducation of Lauryn Hill. And like that's all you hear at every house party. So when we're doing the show, when we'd say freeze, we would always get rap as a genre. And it would sometimes be specific. You know, it'd be like East Coast battle rap, or it would be like, you know, gangster rap, or whatever it was. And so you would have to just do the scene in that genre. And I just was like, oh, this is so fun. I want to create a community where we can just support each other doing this thing. And so I used to do cipher sessions at any house party I would go to. And I also would bring a cardboard box because I was still a b-boy. Like, I still did breakdancing at the time. So I'd have a cardboard box at any house party and be like, who wants to breakdance? And then we'd get into these, like, you know, rap circles and just freestyle with each other. And out of that came a show that I did with Tommy Kail. So at the time, Tommy was not involved in theater at all. I mean, he had done a little bit in high school, but he got to college. He was an American history major. I was also an American history major and a film major at the time. And I said, I need your help. I'm going to be putting up a show, and I think you'd be really perfect to like, you know, co-direct it with me. It was this is like the most liberal arts story of all time. It's a show by Heiner Müller called Hamlet Machine. very esoteric East German playwright. He does something that he calls the shrunken head of Hamlet to really address what's going on in East Germany at the time, right before reunification. Right? So cliche. And so I wanted to do something like that about Wesleyan. We were called Diversity University at the time, and there weren't many conversations happening across race, across identity. And so we cast two black Ophelias, Krishanda Lee and Nafisa Monroe, and we cast two white Hamlets, Neil Stewart and John Buffalo Mailer. And we just started playing. And I said, let's use the text for now. It was like 20 pages of text. It's not anything huge. And I said, cool, let's look at it and throw it away and let's start improvising what we think might be the shrunken head Hamlet version of Wesleyan. And that's what we did. And before every show, we got together and we started ciphering. So anytime the audience was coming into the theater, they'd see us around the set freestyle rapping as they kind of got to their seats. That's how we like warmed up. But we wanted the audience to kind of be involved in that process. And then boom, we would do the show. And there were lots of improv moments throughout the show. And I think that's when Tommy was like, oh, this is what I'm supposed to do with my life. And then started directing thereafter. I'm super lucky to have some small part in that because he's just a brilliant, amazing human being. And then once I graduated and then Tommy graduated, we started Backhouse Productions and we started working on In the Heights. Pretty soon thereafter was our first musical that we'd ever worked on. And I was a TA in the film class and I'd met this kid named Lin-Manuel Miranda and everyone was like, oh, you have to freestyle with this kid. He's like super good at it. And this other woman named Tavi, like you got to like get them together. So during breaks from In the Heights, I would go in and be like, Lin, let's freestyle rap. Like, let's have some fun. Let's blow off some steam. You can use this to help you write your stuff. And so we started a practice of freestyling together. And pretty soon I was convinced him that this should be something we could do in front of other people. And I created a loose format that then maybe like 2 months of doing that, Tommy came to it. I was like, Tommy, come to this. I really need your help on it. So he came and he saw it. And he was like, I've got some ideas. And then probably about a month or two later, like Freestyle of Supreme really started to congeal. And that was when we were doing shows regularly at the Pit. And then we got an offer to do a run at Ars Nova in 2004. So that's sort of the seed and then the small sprout that became Freestyle of Supreme.
So you brought up the diversity question. And I want to ask you if you, again, as this Italian kid from Philly, ever bumped up to it from an external perspective of someone saying, like, what the hell are you doing rapping? And then two, if you ever bumped up at it personally, if you're like, wait a minute, I shouldn't be doing this. Talk to me a little bit about both of those forces.
Yeah, so, you know, I think once I started doing it, it was just a pure expression of joy. You know, it was just this thing that I was really good at. And I'm not quite sure how or why. I think I know some of the ingredients. But when people saw me do it, they reacted, you know, in such a way. They were like, wow, this is something you're really good at. You should continue doing it. And the reason why I have got into theater and deeper into theater was that I'm very interested in exploring what it means to have different perspectives on stage and having especially a black voice be a part of the American theater. That's just like my senior year, we had to do all these different writing projects and proposals, and I proposed the idea of doing Written on the Wind at the Atlanta Rep with an interracial cast and just exploring what it meant to, you know, have black people in love with white people and white people in love with black people and what that means. And I was doing improv at a time when it was predominantly white dudes, you know? And so I wanted to create a show that had the language of hip hop and sort of opened the door in a lot of ways to invite other voices that it was maybe a little bit more ubiquitous for. And that's where it sort of started and continues for me. The reason why I love doing Freestyle of Supreme is you get a really good POV of very different people up on that stage. And that's what I think theater is meant to do. Creating community in that way and learning and hearing about other people's perspectives.
One of the, and you talk about being a pure, your pure expression of joy, but that's what I got from the show itself. Mm. And one of the things that was so unique to me was I talked about how it follows a very specific improv traditional structure, if you will, in the same way that Hamilton follows a very traditional musical structure, but in a very unique perspective.
Yeah.
But you did something different that most improv shows don't do, which is there's this moment in the show where you give this great introduction, and then you say, and everything you're about to hear is real.
Yeah.
And there is a moment which is not a funny, quote unquote, not intended to be humorous number in the show. And I think 99.9% of every single improv show that I've ever seen, and I've seen a bunch of them, all try to be funny straight through.
Yeah.
And you don't. There's a very heartfelt and very authentic moment. Tell me just a little bit about why and...
Yeah.
It just was my favorite moment of the entire evening.
When you came, what was the... Do you remember the...
Grace.
Oh, Grace. Oh, and Chris Jackson. Just... That was like a sermon, right? Like...
I saw... David.
Yes. Oh, right. David. Oh, David ended that one. Wayne Brady was in the middle.
Wayne Brady's sermon that evening.
Yes. Sorry. That was Wayne who did the one that was
mind-blowing
to me. Yeah.
About his experience with his best friend who is his ex-wife.
Yeah.
And how he went into that world. That story was just mind-blowing.
And the grace that he showed her, right? Yeah. And then Utkarsh was first that night.
Anissa, new member, right?
Yes.
New member. Yeah. You talked about
Anissa. Okay, so Grace, yes. Okay, so you were there when Wayne was in it. Yeah, so we do this number called True. And for me, it derived out of this exercise that I learned from a troupe at Emerson. So we used to do, the troupe I got into at Wesleyan was called Gag Reflex. And so Gag Reflex used to tour, and we did a lot of shows at other colleges. And one that we would go to often was Emerson up in Boston. And there was a troupe there called This Is Pathetic. And there were three people there that blew my mind at improv. Evan Blackford, Ann Tebow, and Chris Libby. And those three people, they did an exercise throughout their show at like three different intervals. Let's call it like somewhere in the beginning, somewhere in the middle, and somewhere in the end, where each of them stood out there and did something called 1 minute of truth, where the audience could ask them anything and they would answer it truthfully. And it was... so bold. It was so brave. I remember just sort of being there being like, oh, this is the power of improv, because we're not just saying it's comedy improv. Like it doesn't have to just be one thing. It can be so many things. And I remember seeing that and just being struck at how much the audience appreciated that sense of humanity and listening, that the person on stage would listen to them and respond to the question that they asked to the best of their ability, and how much the audience appreciated that. So when I was creating Freestyle Love Supreme, we have someone in the group named Arthur Lewis, Arthur the Genius, as we call him, and he has an incredible instrument. His voice is something that we kind of reveal during True, because before that he's just playing the piano, and then he steps forward and he sings. And it's one of those, oh.
Yeah, that when he opens his mouth, first of all, he doesn't look like someone like that's going to have that type of voice. So you got that effect for me for sure.
Yeah, so it slightly takes you aback. And we've sort of then set up this moment as, oh, you're about to see us telling you the truth. And I love that Freestyle Love Supreme, the show, is a container for not only hysterical laughter, but a depth of feeling as well. And because we're up there making stuff on the spot, we're going to, it's really hard to obfuscate. It's really hard to lie under that moment. And so things come out that I don't think you're planning on or quite ready necessarily to reveal. But the moment kind of calls for it. And everyone up on that stage, because we have been supporting one another so fiercely throughout the show up until that moment, they're able to really go for it. And yeah, the night you saw it, Wayne talked with his heart on his sleeve about messing up in his marriage. And this person saying, okay, I need to leave you, but I will still be your best friend. And that our show can contain that, I think, is a testament to how much we love and trust each other through the process.
the fact that he could look, that would be hard to just say on a stage, never mind say it in rhythm and rhyme.
Yeah.
So speaking of that challenge, and you talked about you and Lynn being like, oh, let's just practice. What is practice for this? I mean, is it like, okay, we're going to memorize every single word that rhymes with podcast? We're going to, like, what do you do? There's got to be, just like anything else, it looks easy. It looks like you're just making shit up, but there's got to be some kind of process here.
Yeah, I mean, look, at this point, I've done over 2,000 shows with Freestyle Love Supreme. I was not good when we first started. Like, our first shows at the Pit, they were a mess. They were all over the place. At some point, I think someone said, isn't it Freestyle Love Odyssey? Or, like, you know, it was just, like, this crazy thing that just spooled out of control. So having that structure of, you know, for us, it's very much like jazz. The instrument that we're using is our voice and the English language. So that's kind of the major difference. But we want to still be able to understand all the different, like, let's call it, interpolations of the chord structures that would lead to our harmonious creation. So for us, that means we practice harder than we play. So we'll do a normal show kind of structure. We'll work each song, and we'll usually do it like 3 or 4 times. And then we'll say, cool, let's do it again. But now this time you have to do it where we do the non-rhyme version of it, which is unbelievably hard. So you have to set up a very obvious rhyme for the next person, but they have to subvert the rhyme with a synonymous word. For example, what is this, a pawn piece right here on your table?
This is a queen.
A queen, oh, a queen, okay, so it's a small, small piece. Okay, queen, great. You do improv and you call scene, but not if you're king or not if you're... So the other person knows that the word they should rhyme is queen. But now they have to subvert it with something synonymous. So they might say, ruler of the kingdom, right? Like, whatever they can do, yeah.
I'm lost already.
Yeah, exactly. So if you do improv, then you'd call scene. But not if you are king or ruler of the kingdom. Thanks for your help. All right, now I'll put it on my... And then the word would be shelf, but the other person would then subvert that and say... upper closet, you know, and you keep going, you keep passing it in twos, and it's impossible. It breaks your brain because your natural instinct is to solve it. But now you're not only solving it, you're going to the next step. And then when you take that away, it becomes much easier.
And did you make up all these exercises and things?
Yeah, I did.
I mean, that is mind-blowing. Like, what a workout.
Yeah.
You are now teaching this stuff, this very unique proprietary, look at this, we're giving all these exercises away. So tell us about the Freestyle Love Supreme Academy. Tell us about this and how I can sign up and embarrass myself.
Please do.
I mean, of course I went home trying to do this. I'm sure like everybody does this.
I love it. Yes.
You go to a baseball game, you cannot like leave the baseball game trying to hit a home run. But if you go to see Freestyle Love Supreme, I guarantee you'll walk to the subway going like, can I walk to the subway? What the fuck rhymes with subway?
Yes.
You will do that.
Yes.
Tell us how you teach this and how people can learn it.
Well, I love that so very much. And yeah, and the Freestyle Love Supreme Academy, I'm so incredibly proud of. It's this community where we are helping foster creative and diverse voices. That's our mission. And the way we're doing it is we have a very... inclusive format that says everyone in this room has a lot of wisdom, has a lot of skill, and we are just facilitators trying to tap into the wisdom of the room. That's what our show is as well, right? Like, yes, we might be up there crafting some pretty amazing words, but we couldn't do it without the wisdom of the room. Like, the entirety matters so much. And so we follow a couple of really important, let's call them sources of inspiration. One is Paulo Freire's Pedagogy of the Oppressed. So this is a really important book in the history of learning. It's a pedagogical approach to something called communal learning. So it's about learning from each other. It's not deposit-style learning, which is most Western style of teaching. So for us, it's how the group informs each other, and then where there is facilitators, then using something else called the Facilitator's Guide to Participatory Decision Making, which is based out of something called CBPR, Community-Based Participatory Research. Now, these are some pretty esoteric, deep-rooted in making change in community-type learnings and pedagogy. And for us, we think that people are really thirsty for learning new ways of learning. It's something called neuroplasticity, and we're also slightly obsessed with neuroscience and what's happening in your brain. So mostly what we're trying to do is create an environment where people feel super supported, not only by the facilitators, but by the room as well, so that they can take these risks. And when you do that, you start making these implicit agreements that say, I'm going to go further and further. So it's exposure therapy in a nutshell, and we do it with careful small steps, and we've been design thinking the process for quite a while. My partner works at IDEO, so I've done a ton of projects with design thinking. So we took 2 years to develop the first class, and we did extreme user interviews. We did people who were, you know, terrified of speaking in public. We did people who were spoken word poets and have their own YouTube channels, and then sort of found what might fall in the middle there for a wider audience in terms of what it is they're looking for. There's a huge confidence gap out there. There's just this thing that says, I'm not a creative, or I don't want to take a risk. I don't want to look foolish in front of others. So we're creating the play space for people to look foolish and feel okay doing that. And when I think people start embracing that, they're going to be able to fail and learn from that failure. And that's all freestyling is. I failed for so many years at freestyling, and I still fail inside of the show. There's plenty of moments in there that I fumfer or don't completely meet what I think maybe that expectation I wanted to meet was. And it, ultimately, that's not what's important. What's important is that I tried.
I want to get back to the academy, but tell me about that. Like when, I mean, you're going 100 miles an hour, if you will. They can't all be perfect rhymes. They can't all be that.
Yeah.
But you have to keep going.
Yeah, well, if you're sitting in your judging brain, which is the part of your brain called the dorsal lateral prefrontal cortex. So that part of your brain, which is a little bit higher and mostly around like cognitive, effortful planning. Like it's like, oh, I really have to like muscle this thing. I have to have everything in the perfect place in order to succeed. A lot of us have a very loud version of that. And so there's this other part of your brain, the medial lateral prefrontal cortex. It's a little bit further forward. It's on the sides just a little bit more. And that's your creative flow. That's like your state of joy and flow. And for a lot of people, it like happens when they engage in that thing that they just love so much. You know, it's like, oh, I get a runner's high. Or, oh, when I'm in yoga, I don't even realize an hour and a half passed. I just like did it. So that's the part of your brain that we're trying to get to with freestyle. And we've proven inside of these fMRI machines with a doctor out of UCSF named Charles Lim that that's in fact what's happening. So when you engage in this sort of playful like risk and you start going towards that, you start entering this medial lateral prefrontal cortex and you start muting the dorsal lateral prefrontal cortex, which is amazing. Like think about that, right? Like that critic voice that we always have following us around that's saying you're not good enough. Usually it's our parents' voice in some small way. No one's going to love you. That voice gets turned off when you do this. So that judging brain isn't a part of the process when we're on stage for Freestyle of Supreme. It just gets muted because we're like, I have to keep going forward in my flow.
Another great reason why people should study and learn this stuff to get rid of that critic inside us, and the critics also at newspapers. But we could get rid of those too. But what I love about this learning process is the collaboration involved of having, it's so great for corporations or creative teams or wherever it is, just learning how to work with each other, depending on each other to carry forward whatever story you're telling.
Hugely. So I moved to San Francisco a number of years ago, and it was a big uprooting. Like I was doing lots of projects here in New York, and In the Heights was one of them, and The Electric Company was another, and all these different plays, and Bo Willimon and Ann Nelson, working with a ton of talented playwrights. But my partner decided to get a PhD out at UC Berkeley, and I was not going to not live with her. So I said, okay, let's go. And while I was out there, I've started a company called Speechless, and we go into major corporations and we help them with improv thinking. Is sort of what we've kind of coined the expression of your state of flow when you're collaborating with others. People do it all the time. It's just that they're not, you know, necessarily thinking about it in that way. So when we start doing these workshops with people, what ultimately we're getting at is, how do you remain open and collaborative and communicating to the, like, to be the best version of yourself? And that's, I think, what you're seeing on stage at Freestyle of Supreme is, like, the best version of each one of these people. And that's also what Freestyle of Supreme Academy is trying to do as well. And we've been around for about a year now. We have, like, about 100 alumni. And it is just so magical. Like, it's a bit touching as well to hear how many people's lives have changed dramatically after 8 weeks of this class. And one of those people is Anissa Folds. I mean, she was in our class as of March 2019. She went through 8 weeks of class, and we were like, we've got some gigs coming up. Would you mind sitting in and, like, trying this thing out? And then we had an audition, and now she's on Broadway.
Amazing.
Yeah.
How does it feel for you to be on Broadway? I mean, did you ever think you would be here when you were at the Drama Bookshop?
No. Also, this was not a dream of mine. I was not audacious enough to think that improv could go to Broadway. That's just not something, what's the template for that? I mean, Nichols and May, 1961 to 62, you know, like, they did about 165 shows. That's it. I mean, Full Moon, which made a huge impression on me, has some improv elements in it. And W had some improv elements in it, but there aren't any full, there are very few fully improvised shows on Broadway. So why would I imagine that this, I couldn't see what the Earth looked like from outer space. You know, it's just like that 1969 photograph coming back of, oh, we're all on one planet. We all affect each other. I did not think that improv could be on Broadway. So I never imagined it. And then when Tommy called me in, I want to say July of this year, and said, where are you? And I was like, I'm on Howard Street and 3rd in San Francisco. Are you here? And he was like, nope, I just want you to remember where you are when I told you that Freestyle is going to be going to Broadway. And I was like, I like stopped dead in my tracks. I was like, what did you, I think I have a bad connection. It sounded like you said we're going to Broadway. He was like, yeah, we're going to go to Broadway. And I think we're going to be at the Booth Theater. And we're going to be doing improv on Broadway. And I was flabbergasted, for sure.
And what's next?
You know, I think for myself or for Freestyle, or
both.
So I think for Freestyle, the next thing is, how do we continue to spread the love? Like, how do we either go on tour in some way or create these sit-down elements where we can do the academy in a community and then bring people from that community onto the stage? That is super important to me. And because I also think that hip-hop is so unique to each location in which it comes from. I mean, Atlanta sound, I mean, that Dirty South sound is, like, totally different than the New York and the Northeast sound. And the Chicago sound is completely different. Seattle's got its own scene. LA, I mean, like, all these places, they kind of have, I would love to see what version of Freestyle of Supreme would be in those areas using local talent, or at least some of us and local talent as well. So yeah, I think that would be pie in the sky hope, right? That's, yeah. Who knows? And then for me personally, Freestyle of Supreme Academy, continuing to build that. And then Speechless, we're getting into the realm of mental fitness is what we're going to be calling it. We're beta testing a studio in San Francisco right now. So that's normally where I live, the Bay Area. I'm just out here for the run. And that studio is having some open classes to the public. But we also want to scale it to whomever would like to sit in on it with maybe a piece of hardware, or maybe just their phone or their laptop, where they get to play. They do something called restorative play, or they do something to innovative play, whatever it is that they're kind of looking to work on with that state of flow. We've now been around for 7 years, and we've trained over 60,000 people in the corporate community. And so we're taking all of those learnings and building a public offering in these studios. So we're hoping to open more studios across the United States in the next 2 years.
All right, my last question, which is my genie question.
Ooh.
I want you to imagine the genie from Aladdin comes to visit. And he says, look, you're such a positive guy. You are spreading the love, literally. That's how I envision the show and the joy, expression of joy. But there's got to be some things that drive you nuts about this process. So what's been the most frustrating thing for you of working on Broadway or the New York theater scene in general that would make you rap angry that you would ask the genie to wish away in an instant?
Whew.
The one thing that just drives you the most nuts and make you flip up the table and
about the process of getting to Broadway?
Anything about the New York Broadway theater scene. The idea being here is if we throw it out in the world, maybe someone out there has an idea or we can come up with an idea to crush it.
Yeah. I would love to see more improv on Broadway. I mean, I think, you know, it's seen as such a risky endeavor in some ways, or how do you commercialize at that expense point what improv is. But I think there's improv out there that is worthy of being on Broadway for sure. So that's one.
Well, that's a good one, and I will tell you it's certainly the case. As I wrote to someone very recently, you know, I've looked at improv and doing other improv off-Broadway, on-Broadway, and it's always, who's going to pay $150 a ticket for improv when they can pay $8 and a two-drink minimum at the Pit or wherever,
right?
Which is fantastic, by the way. But I will tell you right now, your show is worth $150 a ticket. Plus, so those of you out there, go check it out. It's an extraordinary experience. You'll have a blast. Where can they learn about Freestyle Love Academy?
Yeah, our website, freestylelovesupreme.com, and then there's a tab at the top that says Academy, or you can just type in freestylelovesupreme.com/academy.
Great. Go check it out. I would not be a very good podcast host if I did not say, will you freestyle for us?
Oh, my gosh.
Way out.
Only if you provide a beat. So here's how you do that.
Okay. Well, wait, we're getting a little Academy lesson right now.
Yeah, it's true. All right, so there are two words you need.
Okay.
First word is boots.
Boots.
Great, and that was awesome.
Boots.
Yeah, because it's like a plosive, right? So when Shakespeare writes soliloquies and someone's angry, it's B's and P's, right? So this is a boots.
Boots.
Great, and then the next word is cuts.
Cuts.
Yeah, like, oh, it cuts my finger.
Oh, cuts.
Great, yes, and perfect, because it's a, like, imagine your mouth is like a cave, and then there's this stalactite in the middle of the cave, and that's where the, it's a soft palate. Yes, cuts.
Cuts.
Great, so now you're going to go, boots and cuts and boots and cuts and
boots and cuts.
Yeah. Cuts. Don't want to cut this cut. Interview short, because I'm just chilling up here with Ken cuts. Davenport. Now cuts. We in the top of 1501, and there's not rain, because it's going to bring some sun to cuts. The sky and to the rain that we done. All right, so Ken, thank you very much for having me as your guest. Cuts.
Amazing. Thank you so much for being here. Thanks to all of you for putting up with my boots and cuts. We will see you next time. Hey, thanks for tuning into this week's podcast and for bearing with me as I tried to beatbox. Challenging for you, I'm sure. Not as challenging it was for me. Don't forget about the Super Conference coming up November 16th and 17th, just a few weeks away. Joe Iconis, Heidi Schreck delivering keynotes. We also have Bart Scher, Rick Miramontes, Mara Isaacs, Chris Jones, a critic. We have a critic coming to tell you how to get a good review. All the secrets revealed at the Super Conference. Go to tppsuperconference.com. Get your ticket. If you are excited about this new podcast season, do me a favor. Review us on Apple Podcasts. What this does, it's not about me. It helps other theater makers like you find us and really helps promote the artists that give up their time to have these conversations with me, which is really all for you. If you want to keep up with Anthony and Freestyle Love Supreme, now playing at the Booth Theater on Broadway, follow at Freestyle Love Supreme. Don't forget to follow me on Instagram too, at Ken Davenport B-Way, short for Broadway, at Ken Davenport B-Way. And now, this week's hashtag songwriter of the week. Today, we'll be hearing the song Runnin' from the new musical Beau, performed by Matt Roden and written by Douglas Lyons and Ethan Pakchar. If you like what you hear, you can find more on their website, beauthemusical.com. That's B-E-A-U, French. BeauTheMusical.com. We will see you next week with a brand new Producer's Perspective podcast. Thanks again for tuning in and for supporting live theater wherever you are.
Running till I felt free. But down the road I realized I was alone. The boy I tried to abandon was my only hope.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.